The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perrow columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to the Explorers podcast, where we like to catch up with junior companies with a good story to tell in the exploration and development space. Today we're catching up with Neil Biddle. Neil is Managing Director of Greenvale Mining, which trades under the code GRV, or I'm going to say Gold Romeo Victor. It last traded at 12 cents for a market cap of $41 million. I'm sure Neil will be known to most listeners. A seasoned geologist, Neil started out in the Victorian goldfields and is perhaps now best known for having been the driving force behind Pilbara Minerals. Pilbara is now a $3.3 billion company and a global leader in lithium and tantalum production. Now, it wasn't all that long ago that Pilbara was a $10 million company, and Neil had to work hard on educating the investment community here that there was an EV revolution coming, that lithium-ion batteries would be fueling the charge. Thanks to Neil's briefing in the early days, we all like to think now that we're experts on the lithium mineral precursor spodumene that Pilbara now mines. There are similarities with Neil's work at Greenvale. Neil is planning for near-term production from Greenvale's long-held Alpha Torbenite project in central Queensland. Now, don't feel bad if, like Garen Perrow, up until recently, you have no idea what torbenite is. Torbenite is not a shale or a coal. It's a mineral in its own right, and seams of the stuff at Alpha make it the only quote-unquote commercial deposit left in Australia. Its usefulness comes from its ability to contain up to 650 litres of hydrocarbons per tonne, split into bitumen and light hydrocarbons. Greenvale is also involved in the exploration hunt for iron oxide copper-gold discoveries undercover in the Georgina Basin to the east of Tennant Creek. The ground lease up there has got the likes of BHP, Newcrest and others excited as well. I'll stop there now and get Neil to take up the Greenvale story for us. Hi, Neil, and thanks for your time today.
Hi, Barry. Thanks for having me.
Right. First up, Neil, after the success at Pilbara and your involvement more recently in establishing Barda Gold as our next big gold producer in WA, I assumed that you'd be taking your cruiser for a never-ending spot of blue water fishing. But Greenvale's obviously got you excited. Tell us what it is that you like about the Torbenite story.
Well, Barry, it's quite an unusual story in that I fell into the Torbenite project. We were looking at Greenvale as a vehicle to vend our Georgina project into. We'd been developing the Georgina project over the last 18 months, pulling quite a big ground position together. And we were starting to look for a listed home to vend it into, and Greenvale came up. When we first looked at Greenvale, it had a market capitalization of around $2 million, less than $100,000 in the bank, and it had a Torbenite project, the Alpha Torbenite project, in which no one seemed to be that interested in, and I certainly wasn't interested in that type of mineralization. But when we started looking at the company a bit closer, SRK had been appointed by the then management of Greenvale to start looking at that Torbenite project because they had to spend some money on it or they were going to lose the license. So SRK's petroleum people had prepared a scoping study, among other things. They digitised geology, etc. And that scoping study, I almost couldn't believe it when I read it, but it indicated that the Torbenite project had the potential to be a billion-dollar-plus project over a 10-year mine life. And so I started to get into the detail of it because clearly it wasn't something that we could just discard. And that's when I started to realise that Greenvale, which had held this project for 40 years, had done so for a very good reason, although the the current management of Greenvale, the previous management to us, didn't really, I think, realise its potential. So that was the start of the story, and I've been very much involved with it over the last 6 months.
Now, I understand you're looking at potentially producing three products from the Torbernite, oil, bitumen, and activated carbon. Now, we all know about oil, of course, but what's the bitumen and activated carbon stories?
Well, the hydrocarbons, as you mentioned before, Torbernite contains around 60% hydrocarbon. So you can think of it as a carbon honeycomb with the vesicles filled with hydrocarbons. Now, those hydrocarbons, in fact, Torbernite has an SG of less than one. A lump of Torbernite will float in water. It appears as a solid rock, but in fact, it's a hydrocarbon-loaded rock. The hydrocarbons are roughly around 60% asphaltenes, which is bitumen, and hence the name asphalt's derived from the name of the hydrocarbon, and 40% light crude oil. Since we've been involved in the market, getting involved in the marketing, potential marketing of bitumen, we find that the light crude oil goes with the bitumen in that one of the big products used by the regional shires in Queensland is spray on bitumen, and that's a combination of light crude and bitumen.
Okay.
So it's likely those products will stay together, and the carbon is the residue. Once the hydrocarbons are extracted from the Torbernite through heating in a big oven called a retort, the residual product is pure carbon, and that's the spent Torbernite. And that product has a market ranging from products such as PCI coal, which is a metallurgical coal, through to high-end activated carbon. Now, we've got a lot of test work to do to get to a $2,500 a tonne activated carbon, if we do get there, in fact. So that test work is underway very shortly. We're collecting bulk sample next week, actually. And the activated carbon market is very interesting. It's a high-growth market. Activated carbon's used primarily in air filtration, emissions control, water purification, which are big growth industries, of course. So there is a shortage, a global shortage of activated carbon, and interestingly, Australia imports most of its activated carbon requirements. It imports all its bitumen requirements, and most of its light crude oil is imported as well.
Yeah, of course. So I guess people might say, is there any feel yet for what the revenue split might be going forward? Is this really a bitumen project, or is it really an activated carbon project, or is it an oil project, or is it all three, I guess?
Bitumen will underpin the project, because bitumen is the staple. We're a country of roads, and all our bitumen's imported. Bitumen in Australia sells for between 500 and 600 Aussie a tonne. It comes out of the mega refineries in Southeast Asia at a price that's attached to the global oil price. So the local users of bitumen pay what the international price is at the source, which is the mega refineries, plus the cost of transport bitumen to Australia in heated tankers. So our point of difference is that we're a local producer that can probably beat the imported price.
The transport cost then in heated vessels, do you got any feel for what cost per tonne would be just the transport from these mega refineries in Asia?
Well, the price of a bitumen varies between it's around $260 to $300 US ex the refinery,
right?
So about $450 Aussie, and about $350 Aussie, and the locals are paying $500 to $600 Aussie. So based on that, the cost to get asphalt to asphalt plants in the Brisbane area would be about 150 Aussie dollars plus a margin for the importer.
Okay.
Including a margin for the importer, I should say. So, yeah, it's not cheap to transfer bitumen a few thousand miles by sea.
Yeah, okay. Now, if you could, at this point, give us a timetable for the bitumen project or a likely timetable for the project, as well as a feel for the technology involved. I assume we're talking about simple retorting and refining plant.
Yeah, well, retorts are basically just a big oven. And like every technology over the last 30, 40 years, retorting's come a long way because of computerisation. So the control over the retorting process today is a lot greater than it was when the test work was done historically on Alpha, which was back in the 1980s primarily, 1970s, 1980s. Look, the timing really is we need the next 4 or 5 months to complete a pre-feasibility study. There's a lot of drilling in Alpha, but we can't use the drilling, historical drilling, for a JORC compliant resource because the survey control over the historical drilling just isn't good enough to stack up to JORC compliance. But we know where the torbenite is, so we've got the logs of the historical holes. So we have to go in and drill probably 20 holes. Yeah. We've got a bulk sampling to do some modern retort testing. There has been a lot of testing historically, but it's all been at laboratory scale, and they've produced the products you mentioned, bitumen, light crude, gas and carbon. All those products have been produced at laboratory scale. So we've got to do that at pilot scale. We've built SRK, have on our behalf built pilot retorts, and they are now being set up in a laboratory on the Gold Coast, and we are collecting the bulk sample next week to start that testing process. That'll run into a drilling program, and with the studies, that pilot scale studies, we'll be extracting product to distribute to potential markets before the middle of the year, and that'll give us the feed we need into a pre-feasibility study. And then the second half of the year, we'll be doing final studies and really getting into the environmental side of it and the geotechnical side, finalising mine plans, et cetera, and getting approvals to start the project.
All right. The revenue potential seems quite large. I was just wondering, though, what the CapEx commitment might be.
Yeah, that's a good question. The geology and the mining of it's a bit like the lithium in that regard. The geology and the mining are the easy bit. The technical complexity comes in with the processing and the marketing. The processing on face value is very simple because it's just a question of mining the torbenite, which is very shallow. It occurs between 5 meters and 50 meters below surface. So very straightforward, shallow open cut strip mining, whereby you mine in strips 50 to 100 meters wide and then reclaim as you proceed with the mining. So you end up with a fully reclaimed, a fully rehabilitated mine site. So that side of it's very simple. As I say, the complexity in the retorting, on the face of it, is quite straightforward because the hydrocarbons extract at different temperatures. So that is understood at laboratory scale at about 350 degrees. The light crude oil comes out and that goes into its own distilling tank. And at about 550 degrees centigrade, the bitumen starts to come out and it's fully extracted at around 600 degrees centigrade. So that aspect of it is very simple. Retorts aren't expensive. They're really just superheated ovens. So I think the oven might go to 300 degrees. We need something that goes to 650 degrees. So it's just bigger gas burners with computer controls so that it can control the temperature on the way up to make sure each phase of the hydrocarbons is fully extracted before you move up to extract the next phase. That in itself is a fairly, that refines the products quite well, in that the bitumen that we've seen in the lab test that's been produced is very high quality. So we're hoping that we don't need to do another step of refining.
Mm.
But that has to be tested, as I say, at pilot scale, and that work is about to happen. So we'll have an answer on that. So it, look, if we just have to build a retort and some distilling tanks, then it's pretty straightforward. If we have to take it to the level where we actually have to refine bitumen, then that's going to add cost. And with the produce activated carbon, which is taking the residual torbenite, the spent torbenite, to a level of purification, we don't have a handle on what that will cost. But it won't be cheap, because the process involves washing the torbenite in superheated steam with nitrogen gas mixed in into the mix to get the super high temperatures. So it requires a very a resilient vessel, probably stainless 2202, 2205 rather, and that can get quite costly. So we have to do the work to get the costs on that. If we're just producing bitumen, light crude, mixing in with the bitumen into the for the market, and we're producing the spent torbenite as a filler for metallurgical coal, then our capex will be quite low. I would say well under 50 million.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Well. Okay. Now I better ask you about Georgina Basin. You mentioned it was actually what attracted you to Greenvale as a vehicle in the first place. Where's that at now, that project?
We've got 7 of 9 tenements granted. So we've got about a 5,000 square kilometre package out there. The two tenements that aren't granted are important tenements, because one in particular, the most western of the tenements, the one that's closest to Tennant Creek, contains identified iron oxide copper gold mineralization. We have a updated geophysical signature on that, which indicates previous work missed the target. They were too far west. So we've got a walk-up drill target on that tenement. So that tenement, we require a meeting with the Native Title Group, the Indigenous group that has the land rights over that ground. We haven't been able to get that meeting on, and because of COVID.
Of course.
So Central Land Council is working on that. We're not aware of any impediment. It's been historically held by mining companies, so we're not expecting any impediments there. There's no recorded historical sites on any of the grounds, so we're assuming that will happen. And so, but we've started work. We've flown 15,000 line kilometres of aeromag, and that is being processed now. And we're waiting for the interpretation on that. The program really is, we are focused on alpha, but we will continue to build up layers of data. We're going to continue with geophysics programs over the bulk of the ground. We're waiting on drill results. Geoscience Australia have drilled 12 holes out there, two on our ground and 10 on other ground. Primarily Newcrest ground, but also Middle Island and other companies that are out there. So it's been a big exploration initiative by Geoscience Australia and the Northern Territory Geological Survey. There's a long-held theory that the IOCG belt between, or the IOCG mineralisation at Tennant Creek and at Mount Isa is joined through a number of structures that are continuous below within the Georgina Basin and below the Barkley Tableland. The Barkley Tableland's a surface expression of the Georgina Basin in that area.
Mm.
based on historical geophysics from oil and phosphate exploration. So that's the theory, and they've been Geoscience Australia and NT Survey have been interpreting all the historical geophysical data using the latest technology, and it certainly looks like there's going to be a lot of targets generated out there. It's a pretty exciting project.
So pretty much frontier stuff, but potentially a big prize at the end.
Well, that's it. It's high risk, high reward, but it's, I mean, that's the business we're in. So
gives you a nice mix with the, you know, the Torbenite project and potential there for stable and quite large cash flows given the vis-a-vis the Greenvale's market cap, but then the blue sky upside from Georgina. So,
well, well and truly diversified. You couldn't get to it.
That's very true. All right, now you've given us a great rundown there. Fascinating story both with the Torbenite and the Georgina. So wish you best of luck with it all, and hope to speak to you again soon. Cheers, mate.